Okay, we're ready. This is Tuesday, December 6th, and as I mentioned in relation to Sunday, it's also true about Tuesday, but we lost more of this year on Tuesday, on Monday. A new gimmick was given to the fellows who record. It's a better recording, but they didn't tell them that it doesn't hold 15 shayurim, it only holds three, and it wound up not having enough space, gigabyte, what's the word they use? I think my grandchildren taught me that word. So I want to pick up where I left off. There may be some duplication, but I just want to end off the shiur properly so that the students in front of me heard the shiur. My wife said, why are you being meisa nefesh when we're recording? It's now 7:30 a.m. I had to work it out at a time that I could do it because I have a lot of responsibilities now, family-wise, and particularly my mother. I have to get to the hospital shortly. So I hope I'm not re-repeating, but I told my wife, it's sure the students in front of me heard it, but what about those listening across the world? So I was in the middle of answering the question about a psychological study on the Satmar Rebbe, why he was so anti-Israel. And I explain psychologically the world is based upon Goyim Lam. I do you a favor, you do me a favor. My dear student Danny Wolf is here, bright and early, Davin 555, to record me. He says, do me a favor. But the day may come where he'll need a letter of recommendation, or they're going to call me. I've gotten calls from Kehilat in America, so I'll do him a favor. But sometimes you do a favor that can't be repaid. And psychologists have explained to me, then you either love the person, an unmitigated love, or you hate the person. Because psychologically, he put you into a position where you're in debt to him. And I told the story of three women, Stern College graduates, early years of Stern College, two married. The third one was not that good looking. I happen to know her until today. A very fine person, but not that attractive. She did not marry. All three women came in Aliyah. One woman married to a Yeshiva College graduate a few years older than me, I think 2 years older, had four daughters, and she died of cancer, Lo aleinu, in Tel Aviv. And here a man is left with four little girls, and the other friend who was married made a shidduch with the girl who wasn't married. And this was some chesed to take a girl who had no chance of getting married, and suddenly she has a very fine husband, a Yerusha Mayim and Edela, four lovely girls that she raises as her own. She never had children. And you know something? The girl who made the shidduch and the girl who got married never spoke to each other again from the wedding on. And I once asked psychologists, and they explained to me, that girl did her a shidduch, did her a chesed shel emet. There's no way she can repay her back. And this explains the Satmar Rebbe. The Jewish agency saved him. And how do you pay them back? Gave him his life. And I want you to know, the Rebbe was asked this question, and he responded, so it's recorded, I wasn't an ear witness, that the Jewish agency did not save me. The Ribbono shel Olam saved me. No, if that's your answer, you've got to go back to Rabbi Yisrael Salanta and learn what it's all about, because Rabbi Yisrael always would say that you've got to be mishtadel as if there's no bitachon. And when you've done the maximum hishtadlut, then you have to say, with all my hishtadlut, it's up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu now. And you've got to give the Jewish agency credit for the hishtadlut. We all believe in God. I believe in Ribbono shel Olam. Of course it was God who saved you. But who were the shluchim? How did it come about? Where was the hishtadlut? But this may very well explain the Satmar Rebbe. I don't know whether a psychological study was done, but there's no question that his hatred and enmity towards the state of Israel and the miracles that happen, and to attribute it all to the Sitra Masvuta, or what I call Satanology, it certainly indicates a psychological dilemma. Now, in this quintress, he tells a story about, and I don't know whether I told this in the first part or I'm repeating it now, but he quotes from Amsterdam at the time, the Oel Yaakov. You see the source in the Kuntres, Daf Kuf Mem, and he quotes the source that Shabtai Tzvi wanted to reintroduce Birchat Kohanim every Shabbos at least. You all know that Birchu Kohanim should be every day. And the only reason it isn't every day, Eitzel Eidot HaMizrach, it is. Eitzel Ashkenazim, we're in Golis, it's hard. So, and even Shabbos, they didn't have Birchat Kohanim, only on Yom Tov. So the question was asked, do we reintroduce Birchat Kohanim? The pseudo-Mashiach claims it's time to do it, at least on Shabbat. And the Rabbanim at that period came out against it, Chas v'chalila, anything positive should come from Shabtai Tzvi. And the Satmar Rebbe, or the Satmar Rav, makes the same analogy. How can anything positive come out of the Kofrim, the Apikorsim, Tzva Hagana Yisrael, the State of Israel, the leaders of Israel? And it's exactly his point of view. And then he goes into why one should not go to the Kotel. And here, beginning on page Kuf Mem He, what a description, that the Kotel is filled with pritzot and acts of thunder, terrible acts, and men and women, I'm quoting Lasoto, pritzot unevolat b'makom hamigdash. And the lo yimnau velo yachdu mishum davar machmat habusha machmat hayira v'holchim b'chol yom anashim lalafim. And he describes what goes on and what he thinks goes on at the Kotel, at the plaza in back of the Kotel, and he says that alachat kama v'kama, that whoever goes to the Kotel and is mechazek the Kotel, a tourist attraction, the last sarid of the Beit HaMikdash, that all they're doing is adding flame and fury and fire and strengthening the Sitra Masfuta Satanology. And he comes out 100% against going to the Kotel or the other Mekomot HaKadoshim like Beit Lechem and like Marat HaMachpelah, that the Tzva Hagana Yisrael liberated. This is not a liberation of positive forces, but a liberation of the negative side of God's people or God's angels or the Godhead running the world, whichever way you want to look at Satanology. And then he goes on, Shmuel Shamanu, that told him, the archaeologist want to dig under the Kotel, and he says, in all the generations, no one would ever think of this, to destroy the Kotel Hamaravi, and here nothing will stop them. They have so much strength and so much power. And of course, what he's talking about, there were excavations done, not under the Kotel, on the side. They dug up. It's the most beautiful thing to see. You go underground. Tours are given every day. You have to sign up. I believe you may even have to pay for it. I know in Chol HaMoed Pesach, Chol HaMoed Sukkot, you can't even sign up. So many people are booked already. And you see the levels of the ground and what it was like at the Zman HaMikdash. And it shows that Yerushalayim is ours. It refutes all the Palestinian, the UN, the anti-Semitism, the hatred for the Jews. This is our land. Obama should do the tour with Clinton together. All right, Kalavai, there shouldn't be a cave-in when they're doing it. And he quotes here the pasuk in Yeshayahu Aleph, Ki tavol ropanai mi bikesh sot miyadchem remos chatzerai. And he quotes this pasuk. I'll tell you in a minute, my wife always quotes it. Who asked you to come here? Who asked you to come into the Beis HaMikdash? Who wants you? You're treif. You're no good. You don't belong here. Your hearts are not proper. You're just giving koach to the Masvuta Acher, mi bikesot minchem remos chatzerai. And I apologize to those listening across the sea, but you understand, my wife is a Kahananik. She's I'm a mild right winger. She gets so upset on Sukkot and Pesach, and the city is filled, and endless tourists are here, and then they go back, and it becomes and the areas where the tourists are becomes a ghost town again. And my wife always says, "Mi bi kesot minchem lemos chatzerai." But all I have a more benevolent attitude, the more tourists that come, the more their children see. Ultimately, we get the best coming Aliyah, Trumat Maisrat. I don't want to preach Aliyah now, or why you will be mad at me, friend of mine, in their need for rabbis in the United States, but I have a solution for that too. I'll actually talk about that in class when I, perhaps when I deal with Israel today. I have a solution for that too. But the Satmar Rebbe views that. How do you come to the Kotel? And I don't have to tell you what the Makom HaMikdash is, what it means to go to the Kotel, what's happened at the Kotel, how many people became from, how many people are overwhelmed by the experience. And I said to you the story I told you, these brothers, some of them are listening to me right now, but it's the classic story. I'm not telling you something that I heard about. I'm telling you something where I met the people who were involved. This is from a Reformed family, old-time, mainline German Reform. This kid finishes college and, running around, money he has, he's in Spain, he's in Portugal, he's here, he's there, he's in Greece. Why not visit Israel? And at the Kotel, someone taps him on the shoulders. Would you like to come to yeshiva for 2 weeks? No obligation. Room and board, just you have to attend a few lectures. And the kid says, why not? An American kid, 20 years of age, 21 years of age. Needless to say, he never came back. They send the next brother. What happened to your brother? And the next brother comes. He doesn't come back. They send the third brother. He doesn't come back. They send the kid's sister. Go and see what happened to your brothers. They're nuts. They're crazy. And she never comes back. And today, the mother is still alive. And you should understand, she's an old lady. Her home is still not kosher. Listen to what I'm saying. I asked them this. Not out of hatred, not out of enmity, but simply out of ignorance. And her mother's home was not kosher, and her grandmother's home was not kosher. And they have endless grandchildren, great-grandchildren, oskim b'torah v'mitzvot, all as a result of the Kotel HaMarafi. And then, beginning on page 154, he tells the story about the Nyalag in Hungary, which is a fascinating story. The Nyalag, again, I don't want to go into details, but I let you know, in 200 years ago, the world was not a global village. It's not like today that Rakefi can sit in Jerusalem and participate in the Shluchim Conference and the Aguda Convention. In a baseball game, I think that's better. Pardon me, I don't offend anyone, but I think it's better for your health. When you're in a baseball game, you forget everything, you're a kid again, as I write in Washington. And I hate to say it, it's the first part of my book that's been reprinted. I gave permission, and a book is coming out right now. It's at the printer, and they quote my discourse on why Gedolia Israel loves baseball. But it wasn't a global village then. And it took time for the Haskalah to travel from Western Europe to Central Europe, ultimately to Eastern Europe, and the Haskalah reaches Hungary. And there they develop. They don't become Goyim right away, they don't become Reform right away. It's quieted down now. Years have gone by, decades. They become Nyalag. That's like American old-time conservative. The shuls had an organ. There was probably mixeding afterwards. I think at first there wasn't, and then they had mixeding and an organ. Rabbis already wrote Shubat Rabbi Aaron Chorin that he defended it. And of course, the Chatam Sofer fought them bitterly. And the Satmar Rav says, I yet spoke with old timers in my youth who remember the Chatam Sofer's fight, who yet remember Chadash Asur Min HaTorah. And he says, that's the way we have to fight the Zionism and the Kotel and Sahal. And I have to tell you, the Rav, once off the cuff, spoke on, it was a Shabbos after an RCA convention in the 70s when he already was living with his daughter, and the fellows who were not anxious to go back, didn't have to go back to the rabbinate, many retired. They implored upon Rebbe to stay with them for Shabbos. They got a special rate, and it was a memorable Shabbos. And off the cuff, they asked Rebbe endless questions. I had very good friends there, so I know a good part of the conversation. And they got involved with the Chatam Sofer. And the Rav, throughout a Hakira, he said, maybe had the Chatam Sofer not been so extreme, the Nyalags would not have gone so far. Because he fought them, he empowered them. And then he said, but maybe it's the opposite. Had he not been so extreme, there would be very few from Jews left. And I have to tell you, this is a problem. The Chasam Rebbe, even if his viewpoint towards Israel may be correct, his attitude, how to combat it, may be incorrect, because you never know which way to approach the situation. And we, and at least someone like myself, faces that very dilemma with Riverdale today. If we use Riverdale as a code word, what are we going to do with Chovev HaTorah? What are we going to do with Avi Weiss? What are we going to do with the Rabbah? Do we declare them Chutz L'Tchum and then we empower them? Or can we still keep the bridges of communication open and hope that we can fence in the march towards the framework of Halacha and trampling it? I don't know. It's a very delicate question. I don't want to express an opinion because I don't live in the States. I may know what's going on in the States, but it's not the way I feel about Israel. And it's not just that I know what's going on here, but I live it, I breathe it, I understand it. So in relation to Israel, I'm very willing to state a point of view. In relation to America, I have to leave it to my colleagues who are living there. But it's a fascinating point that the Satmar raises, and then towards the end he goes on again and again, we can't allow ourselves to be fooled by the majority, by what's happening, by the miracles, and he makes an analogy to the Gemara in Bab Metzia, Daf Nun Tet, with Tana de Achnai, where Rebbe Elias is fighting with the Chachamim, and miracle of miracles happened that Rebbe Eliezer is right, the Beis Medrash is uprooted, the trees are uprooted, the flood comes through the Beis Medrash. All the miracles happen, telling the Chachamim Rebbe Eliezer is right, and finally a bat kol rings out that he's right. And the Chachamim say, Lo b'shamayim he. And the Satmar Rav says, with all the majority and the big victories and the miracles, it is no proof. It is Satan. It is not God. It's the Sitra Masvuta. And then he ends off the Kuntres on page 190, the final page of Al Hagula, the Al Hatmura. He ends it off by saying, quoting from Pirkei Avot, "B'makom she'enish hishtadel lihiyot ish," and that's exactly why he's standing in the breach and fighting this tremendous battle. This is the Satmar Rebbe. The 60s into the 70s, right after he wrote this Kuntres, published the Kuntres, he had a stroke. Effectively, a Litvish Rosh Yeshiva could probably no longer function. But a Rebbe, held up by his Gaboyim, particularly Rav Ashkenazi, statements were issued, he appeared in public, and he certainly continued to function to a certain degree, and his public stance remained strong. And the 70s were years of bitter machloket, Satmar versus Lubavitch, Satmar versus Belz, brutal fights on the streets of Williamsburg. The Gentile press, the news happened to be in America one summer. CBS, you saw on the television, Lubavitch has wandered into Williamsburg on Shavuos to teach Tanya, and they beat the hell out of them, and it was one tremendous Chilul Hashem. With Belz, why were they beating up on Belz? Because the new Belz Rebbe by the 70s had matured, accepted Rebbe Yisachar Dov Rokach, became a leader, and he led Belz into Agudat Yisrael, where they remain until today. I need not tell you, this was shocking. Belz, anti-Aguda, Belz, Munkach, and now they're part of Agudat Yisrael, and in the view of Satmar, Aguda was worse than Mizrahi, because they looked for him and had beards and payas and bekishes and shtreimels, and they're part of the Jewish state and they accept Jewish sovereignty. And they fought Belz like crazy. But there was a standoff. In Israel, the Belz beat the hell out of the Satmar, and in America, the Satmar beat the hell out of Belz, and they had to stop the infighting, and I can tell you terrible stories. And the reason was simply numbers. In Israel, there are endless Belz, a few Satmar. In America, endless Satmar, few Belz. But let me end on a positive note. Rakefet has said long ago, the Satmar Chassid of the year 2012 is not the Satmar Chassid of 1952 or 62. Then he was an Ungarische Chassid who happened to find himself in America. Today he's an American, and America has assimilated him just as it has assimilated any other Torah Jew. Willy-nilly, you take on American values. And part of it is, first of all, I once had a long talk with a Satmar Rebbe from a high school in Queens who happened to be in Florida with his wife, and I couldn't believe there was nothing about him that was different than my lifestyle with my wife. And here we are in this hotel in Florida. I'm there as scholar in residence. He's there as a guest. And his love for America, it was beyond words. Israel didn't exist for him. Why does anyone want to go to Israel? We make a good living here. And it's a wonderful country. Underlying the word good living and pleasures and worldliness, he was a real American. And I have to say, in Satmar itself, you see today the two Rebbeim, I believe they're great nephews of the Reb Yoel, and you have Reb Arla and Reb Zalman, and one is in Monroe, one is in Williamsburg, and there too there's a tremendous split. Reb Arla, the Rebbe, already speaks differently. He travels and goes to Chabad shuls. A Satmar Chassid of his built a beautiful dormitory in Crown Heights now, for Lubavitch, for Shluchim to come, for people to visit, a wealthy Satmar. I believe he's one of the owners of Pomegranate, if I'm not mistaken, but a wealthy Satmar, a young man who's done very well in America. And they asked him, how does a Satmar build for Chabad? And he answered, wherever I travel, Chabad provides food for me and guides me. It's about time I did something to repay him. You could not hear these words from Reb Yoel. And I have to give Reb Arla credit when we had the tremendous tragedy in Merkaz Harav and those young men were slain on open gemaras. I think there were 8 or 9 killed, lo aleinu kadosh elyon. I knew 5 of them, either knew them personally or knew their parents, grandparents, 5 of them. One of them davened with the minyan in my parking lot, Motzai Shabbos, right before the tragedy later that week. Go and believe this young kid would be killed that Thursday. He was a grandson of Reb Aaron Bat, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. Who knows if it didn't hasten Reb Aaron's illness or cause the illness. God have mercy on us. And the Satmar Rebbe cried and said to Reb Arla that when Jewish children are killed over an open Gemara, it doesn't matter who they are and what they believe, I cry, I mourn. And these are words that Reb Yoelish could never have said. So I only hope Reb Zalman will follow the example of his brother, and we should be zeicha to ichud, understanding what was, but it's a new world, new challenges, new quests, and Be'ezrat Hashem, it should be a magnificent future. Thank you very much. Okay.